Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.
And welcome. You are listening to Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM, a weekly program covering arts and arts events in Valparaiso and throughout Northwest Indiana. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Hey, our theme music, by the way, that you just heard is Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster.
The fabulous Billy and Renee Foster.
Oh, yes. Wonderful jazz musician. Our underwriters for Art in the Air is Valparaiso University Brower Museum. And our landlord here, right at the wonderful technical building, Walt Breitinger of Paragon Investments. Hey, if you'd like to find out more about leasing space in this historic building, hey, give Walt a call at 219-462-5821. That's 219-462-5821. Always like to thank Greg Kovach, our station manager, for getting us and keeping us on the air.
Yay, Greg.
By the way, Art in the Air is supported by the Indiana Arts Commission Project Grant through South Shore Arts, and that's part of the National Endowments for the Art. Hey, if you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event, exhibit, or even come on and do something with us, please email us at artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. That's artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. Hey, this program, along with all of our programs, are streaming live at wvlp.org. So if you can't hear us, you can dial us up and hear it. Also, this show will be broadcast again on Monday at 5 p.m. Hey, if you missed the show, you can listen to our show archive, any of the shows that we've done all the way for almost a year, and we'll talk about that in a
almost
second.
Almost a year.
Is can be heard at breck.com/AOTA. That's Breck, BRECH.com/AOTA. Also, we have our arts events calendar there. So if you missed something when you didn't get it written down, we have all the hyperlinks, phone numbers, and things like that
and
right there.
It's really easy to use.
It
so
is.
Thank you, and it looks great.
It's actually just basically our script from the show. By the way, you know, this station, along with this program, is brought to you by, well, our listeners and supporters and underwriters, which you just talked about. If you're not an underwriter of the show, well, why don't you do that, especially if you have an arts or arts-related thing? We'd be happy, both Esther and I, to have you support Art on the Air by your support. You can find out more information about that at wvlp.org/support. There's underwriter levels that will meet your thing. You'll be broadcast throughout the day. We'll mention your business or things as just an underwriter, not a commercial, just saying thank you for being a supporter. And, you know, we don't want you to just be a listener. We want you to be a supporter because, like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. And you'll feel real good about supporting WVLP here at this station. Before we start our arts calendar, guess what next week is?
What is next week?
Next week is our first anniversary.
Yeah, wow. It's been a fast year, Larry.
It's been a fast year. Oh, my gosh. It's like it's almost like our honeymoon period here. So, seriously, we'll have Mario Villarreal on as our guest. But we'll
Marco.
Did I say Marco? Oh, yeah, Marco. Well, Marco, I'm sorry about that, but we'll have you on correctly. And we have a bunch of shout-outs from people that have been guests, listeners, and a few surprises in there running right now. And they'll just give us a little shout-out and say hello and everything. From all over the region, people have been on. So well, I hope you give us a tune in next week, especially for our first anniversary show.
Yeah, it's been like a year of wonderful surprises.
I have met
incredible people, and I look forward to the following years.
Well, we both travel in somewhat different circles, and we've both brought people in that we haven't known, and it's been kind of neat. And also get to know my co-host. I mean, we were just literally thrown together to do the show.
We met at the interview.
Right. It was kind of funny. Well, we'll get on with our arts calendar real quick so we can get to our guests in Lake County, or Porter County we'll start off with first. I had the right sheet here. Valparaiso University the Center for the Arts Brouwer Museum. They continue with their Betty Duke exhibit, Social Justice Revisited. Then they have the Sue Kwok Cosmic Light Series and Mark Fletcher Winking Turtle, Whispering Tree. And they already had their gallery talk, but on Thursday, October 3rd, coming up, they're going to have a music performance to kind of view all the things in the gallery. They'll have chamber musicians, an additional gallery talk by Mark Fletcher of his Winking Turtle exhibit, and different things going on. They'll have another event like that coming up on November 6th, and we'll remind you about that also. Village Gallery at the Pines, well, they have a unique exhibit coming up. Richard Brouwer, the longtime, obviously, the namesake of the Brouwer Museum, he'll be curating an exhibit of the Valparaiso University Junior Art Major exhibit, and that'll be opening Sunday, September 29th at 1:30 at the Village Gallery, Pines Village in Valparaiso, Indiana. Link is on our webpage. Chesterton Arts Center, well, they will have many things going on, but they're going to conclude their exhibit with Laura Isard and Ed Shelton. Their different expressionisms that's going to end on the 27th. So you have a chance. Get in there and see it. And that's that
today?
That's the last day. Yeah, it's coming down because for our guests, they're going to be loading in. We'll talk about that in a minute. Anyway, that exhibit will be ending, but if you have a chance to catch it today, by the way, if you sell any of the work, there are 25% of any sales goes to the UGLE, Ugly, which is a non-for-profit preventing bullying. Chesterton Arts Center also will be sponsoring the Worldwide Photo Walk in downtown Chesterton. You can sign up on their website. You can also log in to the Worldwide Photo Walk. I have the link on the site. And on Saturday from about 12:45 to 3, photographers will gather and they will go through the downtown area wherever and shoot that. I curated that or led that one year.
Is George Castle doing it this year?
This is going to be Doonland. I think Steve Bensing is kind of leading it. So
excellent.
And mostly the Doonland Photography Club probably involved, but it's open to anybody, so continuing there. Mac Benderwine's Critique Night will be back on, it's always on Wednesday of each month at 7:30, and we have a whole bunch of other classes that are there, so you can find that. Don't want to talk all about here, but it's on the link here. Art Barn, well, they just finished their Art Blitz. It was, I guess, a big success, and now they're starting gearing up for their fall-winter session of classes. You can find that information there. They have everything from watercolor for adults, ceramic arts, whole thing, scaredy cats for kids, which is kind of themed for Hollywood, a whole bunch of things. So you can find out that at their web link and find out all about what's going on. And they also have Saturday art classes. Artsy Fine Arts, they have a bunch of things going on there. They have nothing. They didn't link me. I stopped in there just yesterday, but they have a few things coming up in October, but I don't have a list of it. But you can always find out at Artsy and Fine Arts Antiques. So go to the web link on our page. Depot Museum and Art, painting Inside Out. Plein air art by Pat Herman. She was one of them that was actually came to Breckwood and painted the moonrise at our place with a plein air artist.
She's really talented.
So that her opening occurred on September 13th, but her exhibit will be running through October 6th. So the depot is right there on US 12. You get a chance to swing by there. And just down the street from that is the Ellen Firm Gallery. And Mac Kubik is there, professor, traveler, curator, artist. He's going to do a bunch of things. And his exhibit also opened on the 13th, but will be running through October 8th. So you can see like different drawings he's done throughout his travels throughout the Memorial Opera House. Well, guess what they're opening tonight? It's the Agatha Christie's Mousetrap, one of the longest running plays, never seen in television or motion picture, and probably won't be until it goes into public domain because Agatha Christie mandated that it would never be filmed or anything like that. So after it's in public domain, they can't stop that. But anyway, it'll be opening September 27th, running through October 16th at Memorial Opera House. So Roots Organic Cafe. Well, this is a new artist. I met him, Ken Christensen, and he's having an exhibit opening on the 28th of September from 2 to 4 at the Roots Organic Cafe in Valparaiso. And he has about 35 pieces of his work, photography, and they'll be running through September and October. So, and they'll also have a violinist there for the opening. So, and finally, Dig the Dunes. Well, Dig the Dunes has two things. One, they're looking for page sponsors for their 2020 calendar. So if you're interested in being a page sponsor for their wonderful calendar that features photography and art from all over the area there. And if you're interested in submitting things, you can also do that too. They're going to be taking submissions for their 2020 calendar. So that's what we got going for Porter County.
Until is there a date when they're... When does it close?
I don't have a close date on that yet, but they just posted it, so it's probably, usually it's at least open for a month or so.
Okay, good.
So it's nothing immediate, but this is the first notification of it.
Excellent.
Now to LaPorte County.
LaPorte County, the Thaddeus C. Gallery is in LaPorte. Visit them. They're a really wonderful gallery there. The Lubesnik Center for the Arts, the Chicago Imagists Before and After. That exhibit runs through October 19th and is showing in all three galleries. Rising Phoenix Gallery, their exhibit Petal, Waves, and Wings, the Pastels and Watercolors by Mary Ann Pals, our guest today, so she'll be able to talk about that exhibit and her current one coming up. Their next exhibit will be the Dunlin Plein Air Painters, and that opens on October 4th. SFC Gallery is exhibiting the paintings of Nathan Biancardi, and so we're on the last few days of that, and their new exhibiting artist will be Patty Schaffner. Southern Shore Art Association, also in the last few days of their exhibit, Your Best Shot, which was curated by my co-host, Larry Bruckner, and their October exhibit is on the weather called Sun, Rain, Snow, Wind, and Clouds, and this exhibit will depict weather as the major factor. Do you know anything additional on that exhibit?
I just know that I need to submit 5 pieces and I take them in on Sunday and I haven't picked them out yet. So I'm still trying to get the other exhibit because I have to be there Sunday to clear out the current exhibit. So yeah, too many balls in the air.
Lots always. Makes it exciting though. Blink Contemporary Art, they're exhibiting the new work by Suzanne Cohen Lang and Rick Lang. Nest, our exhibit, Robert Serco, Me, Myself, and Eyes, his recent paintings and drawings. We just had last Sunday the artist talk with Greg Hertzlieb. It was really, really interesting.
Former host on the show.
Yes, indeed. And Bob, there were a few questions specifically for Bob, and we called him up, and he was able to, we put him on speakerphone, and
how's he doing, by the way?
Questions. He's having a rough time. Yeah. Every first Friday, we have the Drum Circle, except I have to contact the Drum Circle. If you're listening, we can't do it first Friday because I have a movie happening. The 5th annual Michigan City Video Fest is happening on Drum Circle Day, so I've got to call everybody. So, but so if you're hearing this...
you're telling the Drum Circle people to beat it.
Yeah, well, just like delay it. Saturday, September 28th, the Writing Out Loud series continues at 7:30 p.m., and this is a collaboration with the Michigan City Public Library. It's the 35th season of their Writing Out Loud program, and we will have playwright and screenwriter Mary Ruth Clark, and this is a free program. Please come and see us. Sunday, September 29th, we have Sham, and their Sham Fabulous, fun group out of Basement Rock out of South Bend, and that's at 7 p.m., Thursday, October 3rd, My Path Storytelling Open House with Roger Batten. We're continuing our collaboration with Roger. It's been so wonderful. He has a great program called My Path. Come and listen to these stories. Friday, October 4th is the 5th annual Michigan City Video Fest at 7 p.m. Friday, October 5th, we have a solo show with our fabulous Captain Ambivalent called... Da, 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 da. Fear the Accordion, the show that laughs in the face of dystopia. It's a side-splitting solo multimedia musical at 7 p.m. And boy, we love Captain Ambivalent. And for all the rest of it, I mean, I could go on and on and on with what's going on, but please look at the wonderful page that Larry set up or our Nest Michigan City Facebook page. We'll have more events and details. And that's it for LaPorte County.
Well, excellent. Now we'll move on to Lake County. Before we move on to our guests, Lake County at Studio 659 in Whiting, they still have, they've completed their call for art for Bump in the Night, and that will be opening later this month, or early October, I should say. Metropolitan is just coming down. That was the exhibit they previously had, and Bump in the Night is a Halloween-themed exhibit that they'll have there, and they'll be running through November, so you can find out information there. South Shore Arts, well, they, in the Bachman Gallery, they continue with the Salon Show, which opened on September 14th. That was curated by David Clayman. Then the Atrium Gallery has a new exhibit that will be opened. Well, actually, it's just opened, but it will have a reception on October 6th. It's Marianne Trisna, Path to the Beach, and it's a beach-themed show through November. At Substation Number 9, actually, we haven't had anything from them recently. They'll be featuring Julio Guerrera for Gallery of the Voice, and his opening will be Saturday, October 5th. Toll Theater, now has still continues with Annika Deniker, Between the Real and Imagined, and that's about it for Social Arts. Miller Beach Arts and Creative District is continuing with Martha, nicknamed Marty Bowen, 75 of her photographs from Nepal, India, Cuba, and that's going to be continuing through October 6th at the Marshall J. Gardner Center for the Arts. You can find information there. Hey, South Lake Artists Cooperative, well known as SLAC, or the Slackers, they have some updates for us. They'll be opening their new exhibit called Word, and it's used different kinds of themes on Word and everything like that at the Sip Coffee House in Crown Point. They'll be open October 4th, and they'll have a celebration and exploration of communication, words, poetry, stories, and things like that, both visual and otherwise. Their China Cats Sunflower at Sip Coffee House 2 is closing out, and their next exhibit in November is called Crackle, and you can find all the details of their unique labels for the show. That art for that will be due on October 14th, and that will be going into the Sip Coffee House at Highland. Theater at the Center. Well, they continue with The Pajama Game, a classic 1950s show.
It is a classic.
That really raised Bob Fosse's and Gwen Verdon's profile in musical theater and everything. Bob Fosse went on to almost develop in a very unique choreographic style, being a musical theater guy.
And Gwen, oh my gosh.
Oh my
Gwen.
Gosh. I mean, they were even after they were not really together, they were still collaborators for years. And I remember the one story, there was a in Washington, D.C., they were doing a revival of Chicago, which Bob Fosse always wanted to do as a motion picture, never got to do it. And they were in the final rehearsal, and I guess on the street is that where he had his heart attack and passed away. They were walking together and everything. It was just after the final. So kind of a classic love story throughout their lives, even though Bob Fosse has a very unique life that way.
Yes, indeed.
But anyway, that's at Theater at the Center. You can find out the information on our thing. This is a new one. It's called the BBB4E. It's Books, Brushes, and Bands for Education. This is in Hammond, and they have classes in October until October 17th, and they have things like Let's Sing, Children's Choir, Midwest Choir, Youth Choir, orchestras, and bands. It's kind of an enrichment program that meets on Monday, Tuesdays, and Thursdays, and they start after 5 p.m., and they're at the Merge Building in Hammond on Holman Street. You can find out information right now, just a Facebook page, and there's phone numbers on our thing. Lakeshore Community Concerts, they already had their Michael Bublé opening. You can find out information about that. Northwest Indiana Symphony, find out about their upcoming concerts and everything like that. Hey, where's your event on our calendar? Well, you can send it to us at artontheairwvlp@gmail.com. Love to add it to that. You know, we know we take the first 15 minutes of the show to do that, but it's also always available at our events page. So please do that, and we'd be happy to have you there. And we hope to hear you next week for our first anniversary show. But right now, we have two great guests here who have an exhibit coming up and have things currently in exhibit. We have Larry Jensen and Marianne Pals, and they're our exhibits. They're going to talk about their exhibit coming up very shortly. But welcome to Art on the Air.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, well, we'll first start with you, Larry. Let's tell us a little bit about your background, like where you grew up. I always like to say, how did you get from there to here?
I was a vagabond, really. I was born in Kansas. My parents moved to Iowa. Then they moved to Duluth, Minnesota. Then I went back to Iowa. Then I went to Iowa State University for my degree.
And your degree was in what?
My degree was in physics.
Oh, okay.
Which is not art.
Well, there's an artfulness, I guess, to physics, if you think about it.
Some people believe it. Yeah, yeah. Then I moved to Wisconsin, and then to New York, and to Pittsburgh. So I keep moving around. I don't pay my rent, I think, is the main reason.
And how did you land in Northwest Indiana?
My wife grew up in Long Beach by Michigan City, and we had friends that wanted to get a part-time house together for weekends. So we started looking, and then they dropped out, but Rosemary and I were hooked by that time. So we started looking around and discovered Beverly Shores, which was very wild still and only 50 miles from downtown Chicago. So we said, oh, this is wonderful. So we bought land, we got an architect, and we built there in 87. We moved in, and it's been wonderful.
Well, and it's a very rich arts community too, very arts based.
People are very, very diverse there, yes, but there's lots and lots of art that artists in Beverly Shores of all kinds.
Very eccentric.
Yes.
So moving from physics into art, tell us about that journey.
Well,
And you, first of all, what did you specialize in physics? Anything specific?
No, that was just my bachelor's degree.
Okay.
From there, I went on. I was going to go into meteorology research, but I didn't do that.
Okay.
And then I went to Pittsburgh, and I taught high school for a long time. And then I decided I wanted to branch out, so I went into the School of Public Health in a radiation degree, and then I ended up in Chicago in with the EPA.
Okay.
And most of my career was cleaning up old radiation sites that EPA was
If we turn on the lights out, will you glow in the dark?
No.
Okay.
Only his wood turnings glow.
Just the wood turning skills will glow in the dark.
Although wood turning, there's certain woods that if you shine a black light on.
I know, that's what I was referring to.
I had an exhibit one time at the Lebesnik Center, and it was called Seeing the Light.
Yeah, in the bathroom, right?
I was in the bathroom.
That was
where it was. There was no windows in the bathroom, and I could put black lights in there and then show these pieces that I had turned that changed color when you turned on the black light.
They were, wow. They were.
That was funny. There's a lot of woods that respond to black light, but there was just two that time. The locust, honey locust, I think, and the...
It's like a sassafras or something? Or was it a sassafras? Or
no, it wasn't sassafras. No? I want to say sedum, but it wasn't sedum either. Anyways.
What causes that? And since you're a physicist, you should all maybe have that answer, the scientific answer to that question. You don't have the answer. Okay. So let's move on. So you tell us a little bit about how you started doing art. Did you just start doing your woodworking, or how did you get into that? Or was your journey there?
Well, I've been trying to think back in my history here. First thing I can remember is my mother got rubber molds and poured plaster of Paris in those. And so we made plaster of Paris molds, which we then painted. And so she kind of got me started that way.
Do you remember what those first molds, did you take something from nature and do a mold from it, or was
whatever
it a pre?
Whatever was on the shelf at the art store was what she pulled off.
Oh, cool.
Nothing very special. My dad also helped me things at the time. This is like I was 4, 5, 6. This would be early 50s, maybe. Anyways, all the grocery stores had what they called orange crates.
Okay.
Things that were going to get damaged came in, and they were wooden boxes about 2 feet long and about a foot wide and about a foot high. And they were wonderful for building things. So my dad found some orange crates, and he built a barn. This was Iowa. He built a barn, so barn out of orange crates.
And it must have taken a long time using that.
No, it didn't take very long at all. It was easy to put together. My grandfather also did woodworking, but I didn't find out about that until much later after he died. But he made a couple pairs of wooden shoes out of walnut. He'd carve those. He made wonderful set of teapot with little cups and saucers. So that was very interesting. So.
Well, teapots will then continue to be a theme for you as well.
Yeah.
Since you, yeah.
Yeah.
Your abstract teapots.
But I got into wood turning, which is with a lathe. It's a motor, it spins, everything comes out circular or cylindrical. A very good friend of mine that I grew up with in Duluth said, I got a friend that's got these refurbished lathes. You want to buy one? $100. Wow. Okay, so I bought it. It turns out it was a lathe that the Milwaukee school system bought in 1934. Wow. So it was really antique lathe.
Dependable,
so that's where
though.
I started. And then later on, I bought a more up-to-date lathe. And accidentally, I go to the American Association of Woodturners annual meetings every year. And one year they had a bunch of bowls that were cut by Japanese for rice bowls, and they had leftovers from a show, and so they gave a bunch of the people in the organization these bowls and said, do something with them. And one guy, he just took and he painted the outside of the bowl and then put black and white rice all over it, and that was his rice bowl. So
so
it made me think, and so I figured, well, how can I hold this rice together? So I got epoxy and black and white rice, and I made it into a cylinder and then turned it on the lathe into a bowl. And it looked very, very granite-like, which was exciting to me. So then I started going there. A friend of mine had set up a store in Chesterton called Molly B's. So I went down the aisle and started raiding her things for colorful textural things.
Lentils and all sorts of stuff. Didn't
oh,
you
yeah.
use like
I
red lentils?
A lot of, and blue and yellow corn
I have meat. To, I'll just interject. They are so beautiful, those, the mixture of the wood with the resin. They're just gorgeous, Larry. It was quite a beautiful leap. And I have, and you know, I have a really large collection of Larry's work, which I started. I love those little turn bowls that you, I mean, the mini, the tiny ones. I have, I just love those so much. So to watch the progression from that to the resin, it's like
yeah,
so
I've
beautiful.
Been through a lot of phases. When I started with my lathe, it was at a time when there was a guy named Rudy Osolnik in Berea College that turned wood with lots of roots. So I ended up with lots of holes when it was all done. Mm-hmm. So I started doing that. But the first thing I really did was to raid our wood pile because we burn wood to heat our house. So I made a lot of vases and dried flower vases. And then those got popular. And then so I kept going on from there. Kind of eased into the epoxy.
And then to sculpture. Organics. So it's just been an evolution.
It's been an evolution, yeah. And just recently I had an accident where I fell, and I decided maybe I shouldn't be working around heavy machines so much anymore. So I've been experimenting with alabaster, which is a soft stone. It's very easy to shape. You can do it with sandpaper,
mm-hmm.
and I can
some
do some
files.
Of it on my lathe.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's a new way to go. It's fun. I keep changing things.
Excellent. We're going to move on to our other guest is Marianne Powell. She's a pastel and charcoal artist living at the southern tip of Lake Michigan. So tell us a little bit about where you came from and how you got here.
Well, I grew up in South Holland, Illinois. Went all through grade school and high school there. I made a crayon drawing when I was in second grade of a farm scene, complete with a farmer on his tractor and the red barn and all the animals running around. And I even put udders on the cows. And I was a detail person even back then.
That was an utter delight.
Oh. Yes. And my teacher, every teacher in the school every spring needed to choose one or two students to represent that grade level in an all-school art show. And that piece was chosen by my teacher to represent second grade. And during the little art reception, my first art reception, I was 8 years old, the teacher took my parents aside and said, get this girl in some art lessons, private art lessons. She shows a lot of promise. So the very next year, I started taking art lessons, private art lessons, from the art teacher in South Holland, Julia Van Clay. She gave lessons in her basement. And anybody who showed any art promise in that little Dutch town took lessons from Julia Van Clay. And I took lessons from her all the way through, like, 7th or 8th grade.
Wow.
Yeah. Every week during the school year, I was going at it.
Was it all different kinds of medium or mostly drawing?
She taught the classic method of teaching art, which is you start by learning how to draw. And you learn how to draw anything, everything. And then finally, you move on to color.
Mm-hmm.
And the first color medium you use is pastels. And then you move on to oils and acrylics, and watercolor was last. She would not move you from one medium to the next until you were highly competent. And I took years using only charcoal until she felt I was competent enough to go on to pastels. I ached for color. I just wanted to get to the color, but she's like, you still can't draw just anything I put in front of you, Marianne. You have to learn how to draw first. And I am so thankful for that foundation in drawing. And then when I was introduced to pastels, she talked to my mother and said, you must buy her really good pastels, mm-hmm. none of this student grade stuff. And the really reputable, there was only one reputable pastel company at the time, called Grumbacher. My parents spent a lot of money. I think it was like the only Christmas gift I got that year, but they gave me a small set of Grumbacher pastels. I still own them and use them.
Oh my gosh, that's fantastic. By the way, you're listening to Marianne Pals and Larry Jensen here on Art on the Air, WVLP 103.1 FM. Well, this must be a long-lasting Christmas gift, the gift that keeps on giving.
Well, you don't use very much. If you've got lots of pastels, you don't use very much of any one color. And I've accumulated just a few more pastels. My husband says I suffer from PAD, P-A-D. He coined the term pastel acquisition disorder. I own thousands of pastels now. And I only use that first set when I just can't find the color in anywhere else.
Do they still make that set? I mean, is that still?
Oh, no. The Grumbacher Company, no. No.
So it's a collector's item now.
It really is. And several years ago, late at night, I was looking on eBay. Every once in a while, I look to see if anybody's got some old Grumbachers. And I found somebody selling a 72-piece set for a song. And these were, like, mostly untouched.
Wow.
I bought it.
Of course.
Yes. Because they don't wear out. They don't give out. They don't dry out. They're perfect. Still, after all these years. So that was my first color love. So even after I went to oils and acrylics and watercolors, years later, I went back to my first color love, pastels. I still do charcoals once in a while. Pastels just, I absolutely love working in pastels.
So you did this all the way through high school. Then where'd you go study?
I went to Northwestern College. It's a little tiny college in Northwest Iowa. They had a great art department there. I wanted to major in art, but my parents said, you really need a practical degree. So I majored in elementary ed, but every single elective I took was in the art department.
Right.
So I came out with a minor in art. And I'm really thankful that I got my teaching degree, too, because I'm still using it to this day. I'm teaching big people instead of little people. I taught second grade for 7 years after college.
Where was that at?
It was in Flossmoor, Illinois.
Okay.
And then when we had our son, we have a son and a daughter. When we had our son, I decided to be a stay-at-home mom. And then I put my art making aside for several years there. But then when our daughter was about 4 years old, I decided it was time to pick up my art supplies again. And I decided to do it in earnest and make a career choice out of it then. And I started taking pastel lessons from really famous pastelists. Pastelis, whose work I just admired greatly. And I had to travel to some places pretty far away in order to do that. But I felt like if I want to further my career and use mainly pastels, I need to study under somebody whose work I absolutely
so
adore.
So who did you choose?
I took several lessons and workshops from Larry Blavitz. He's from Grand Rapids. I flew to Scottsdale, Arizona, and I took a week-long pastel workshop from Sally Strand. Mm. She's internationally famous. Yes. I also organized and hosted pastel workshops right at the Chesterton Art Center. Because I found out that the organizer can take the workshop for free. So I would organize the whole thing and have the artist come out. And
was it Mary Burkhardt or who was through Chesterton? She did a few master pastel classes maybe 8 years ago. It was fabulous. She's fabulous. She used to show at the Chesterton Art Fair for many years, but I haven't seen her recently. But she had like two or three master pastel classes through the Chesterton Art Center.
I probably organized those. Yeah. There were a number of master pastelists that I organized workshops for, and it really helped me a lot. My my art career just skyrocketed once I started taking those classes. And now, and this was a long time goal of mine to try and become a master pastelist myself. And you have to reach certain goals and earn points by getting into certain international art competitions. And I, after 10 years of working at it, I finally am now a master circle pastelist.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. As of April of this year. So.
Very good. Now, what brought you to Northwest Indiana? So we last heard we were in Flossmoor.
Right. about 27 years ago, my husband took a job in Valparaiso.
Okay.
And he was commuting from South Holland for a year or so. And when a truck wrapped itself around his car, he came out unscathed, but his car was totaled. He said, we need to move. We need to move closer to Valparaiso. So we started looking, and we found a wonderful home in Chesterton that's got woods. And he's a bird watcher deluxe, so we have like three or four bird feeders out on our back deck every day. We take them in at night so the raccoons don't get them. The birds come to us. I have been doing a lot of bird paintings in the past few years, and I have no excuse because the birds literally come to me. Photography is my second love. I've got a couple of really good Nikon cameras, and I take really nice close-up photos so I can get that realistic look in my paintings. And
can I say for a second, if you haven't seen Marianne's work, the pastel work she does with birds are literally almost photorealistic in detail. They really are. I mean, you look at them, it's like, is that a photo? And they really
Thank
are.
Thank you.
I'm serious.
Thank you. Yeah.
I love like when in Facebook watching you develop some of your things. Like
yes.
You post like a whole thing. It's like, oh, look at that. And then the next phase, and it's just it's wonderful to watch the progression.
Thank you. Yeah. I started doing these, you know, progress pictures of my artwork on Facebook a couple of years ago, and I got such wonderful response from people.
Oh, they're so exciting. I mean, to watch.
They feel like they're looking over my shoulder. And every once in a while, I'm like, are you guys tired of this? And they're like, no, keep going. We want to
I know.
To
it's
see.
Like the best part of Facebook, really, I think.
It is. It's so immediate, mm-hmm. you know. But it was kind of scary at first. It's like, what if I start making mistakes? What if this doesn't turn out? Well,
that's good, too, though.
But that's okay,
it's
too,
good
really.
For the public sure. to know that not every piece hits it out of the park.
Yeah.
You know?
And then you rework sometimes things for a year until
and
you...
And it's a process, yeah. Yes. So, no, I've gotten really good response from that.
You know what I also...
may agonize you, Marianne, but I use pastels in my work, too.
I know. You grind them. How dare you do that?
When I need special colors, I go and get pastel sticks, and I put them in a coffee bean grinder.
Oh, I don't want to hear this. I'm going to cover my ears.
And I get beautiful colors.
You know,
but it's not the same.
Whenever every once in a while, when I'm taking a workshop or I'm giving a class in pastels, and somebody drops their pastels on the floor, it's just like I have to. It's like no. These things are so valuable. Everybody cringes in the class when that happens. Now, lately, I've been thinking, okay, maybe I should pick up the dust and put it in a baggie and give it to Larry.
And I probably would have a lot of fun using it.
Yes, you probably yeah. would. Yes.
So I have actually a technical question. Some pastel artists, and I'm sure it has to do with fixative or the quality of the pastel, but the pastel will come, I mean, you'll purchase a really beautiful pastel, but then
the dust,
it falls off and you've got a, so is that the quality of the pastel that they're using, or they're just not fixing it properly
okay.
when that happens?
Most of the time, I don't fix my pastels
okay.
at all. I just get them behind glass as soon as possible. It's partly the pastels, because if you don't have good quality pastels, if you have student-grade pastels,
right.
there's so much binder. Mm-hmm. They just flake off. Mm. It's just a lesson in futility. I tell my students all the time, buy as good a brand as you possibly can. And I give them a list of student-grade pastels and the really good stuff.
That's
good.
And I
tell them, do not buy from the student-grade pastels. You'll be wasting your money. But also, your surface is very important. Mm. Your surface, if it's a good surface, it will grab those pastels and hang on to it, those pastel bits.
Sure.
So it's really a combination of those two things.
What is a good surface is for us who are uninitiated in that?
Well, I use three or four different surfaces. I vary it depending on what color is available in a different, in a certain brand. I really like UART sanded pastel paper. And it's a sanded surface. It's a sandpaper. But it's really fine, and it grabs that pastel. And then there's La Carta, and it's made by Sennelier. And that's a really nice surface, too. But then the one that's my all-time favorite lately is Pastel Matte. All one word, Pastel Matte. And it feels like matte board. And it feels like it's not going to grab the pastel at all. And it grabs every single bit of pastel you put there. But also, when I am done with a pastel painting, I keep it on the board that I'm working on. I take it outside or in my garage if it's bad weather. And I make sure it's clipped tightly to my board. And then I spank the back of the board. I hold it upright, you know, and I spank the back of the board many, many times. I tell my students, you spank it hard. And that all those excess pastel bits fall off. And
then you don't have to worry about
it. Don't have to worry. And you blow hard on it. But you do not blow indoors because that's toxic. That can, all of us pastelists, when we get together at the International Pastel Convention in Albuquerque, New Mexico, every 2 years, we talk to each other about how we all probably have rainbow lungs.
Yeah, and I know a lot of pastel artists have left the medium that they love just because of the dust and have moved on to other ways to express themselves.
Like, well, I use an air filter every minute that I'm in my studio. I have an air filter turned on.
That's good.
A HEPA air filter.
We always worry about Larry, like in those early years, and what were you breathing with your shavings? Yeah. That was a conversation
well,
a lot
that
of us.
I'm getting into alabaster, I find that it comes
That's
up
a
with
fine dust.
Lots and lots of dust.
Yes, indeed.
And I got three vacuum cleaners that I use around at the same time around where I'm working, and I'm hoping that'll do it.
Now that we're back to you, Larry, I was going to ask you about, you had a stint where you were artist in residence for the now in the Lakeshore, but now the Dunes National Lakeshore, now park. You actually did that and produced some work as a result of that. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, this was about...
The exhibit was at the Chesterton Art Gallery.
Yes, it was, which we'll get to in a little bit while we still have some time left.
It's about 2009. I was accepted as the artist in residence. And the project that I chose was to try and do wood turnings of as many of the indigenous trees in the park as I could find. And shortly before that, there had been a tremendous storm in Beverly Shores, so there were a lot of trees laying around, so I had things to do. But I think there was 96 indigenous trees, and I was able to find 41. And so I made that, and then I had, you have to have an exhibit, and for the exhibit, then I made a book. So there was 41 wood turnings in the book, and then a good friend of mine who's a wonderful writer but also really knows her trees, named Joan Engel, wrote an essay for each tree. So we have an essay on the left side and a picture on the right. And that was in 2009 at the Chesterton Art Center.
And I've seen that book. It's
it
really
was a beautiful exhibit.
It's called Turning Timbers, and it's still available. It still sells. In fact, I just got a check this week for one. But also, I decided a couple years ago that I would like to do a companion to that one. So I took the same woods, new turnings, same essays, and put that together. And we have coming up in early October now at the Chesterton Art Center a new exhibit using the new pieces that I've done. So there'd be 46 46 pieces in this this exhibit, and Marianne Pals and I are sharing the exhibit together, which is really wonderful. That's really nice.
And that's really why we have them here, WVLP, Art on the Air, and we want to talk about that exhibit here. And also, we're here on Red Hawk Radio, WIUN. So now that we got to the exhibits, why don't we tell what's in it? I'll let Marianne go first, and then sure. You can tell us a little about what you've got in it at the Chester and Art Center, when it is, and all that.
It's October 6th through October 30, right?
Yes.
30th, yeah. Yes.
I know because Ilian Artist is coming on the end of yours. So.
Okay. And our opening reception is October 6th from 2 to 4. The title of our exhibit is In Our Nature, because it's all nature-themed artwork. Like Larry just said, he's got 46 pieces in the show, and they are all in his new book, which will debut at our exhibit.
Oh, fantastic. Right.
And I have 50 pieces that will be in it.
Are you doing front? Are you doing like the front gallery, Larry, and you're doing
the whole shebang? The whole.
So they're
building.
All mixed and everything. So.
Yes. Very good. Both front and back gallery will be filled.
Excellent.
It's a lot of work, but we're excited about it.
It'll be
we're
great.
Really excited. It's all nature themed artwork. And, you know, Larry's is naturally nature-themed. And mine really is, too, because I just don't like drawing buildings. That's just not my thing. So, you know, it's all things in nature. Birds, close-ups of flowers, landscapes. So we're excited about it.
No, I'll be there because I always photograph all the events that are going on there as part of my little mission there.
Oh, and I'm going to be demoing.
Oh, excellent.
Yes, I started a fall leaves painting. I've been doing progress pictures of it on Facebook, and I got it up to the point where I told my friends on Facebook, now I'm up to the juicy part, and I'll be doing that as a demo during the opening reception on October 6th.
Ooh, that's a bonus.
Yes, and Larry will be showing people different kinds of wood that he uses in his art pieces.
But I can't really do any demo because my lathe probably takes about 8 guys to move it. It's all cast iron.
So we won't be seeing the lathe there.
But. So it'll be more jabber.
Are you going to have now some of the alabaster pieces you talked about in this exhibit?
No, I'm not that far along.
You're not that far along yet.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, and it's 2 to 4. Well, tell us, Larry, about the process that you go through when, you know, you said you used different colors like resins and things. How does that work when you mix that in?
First of all, you have to set up a mold of some sort. Often it's square. Sometimes it's round.
Right.
Sometimes it's a plastic bowl. So it's something to hold what I do. If it's just going to be straight epoxy with colorings in, then what you do is I have an epoxy that you can control the amount of the two parts. Epoxy is two parts, a resin and a hardener. So I put those together, and then I mix in the powder, and then I put some more in. And it usually takes about a day of hardening before I can do it again. But you can never go over about an inch because it gets too hot. It starts to bubble. And so you have to be careful. In fact, I've had it melt plastic containers sometimes because it gets too hot.
Oh, my gosh.
Does it cook the grains ever? Do the grains maintain their integrity, or do they get soft, like when you use the rice? Because it looks like it
stays firm.
Oh,
it doesn't affect the rices. Okay. Yeah, that's all powders. When I first bought my epoxy, the guy at the store said, oh, yeah, I made up a bunch of epoxy one time. I did it in a Coke can, and it melted the Coke can. So it you have to be a little bit careful that way. But I do a mix. Sometimes I have wood in the mold along with the epoxy mixture. Sometimes it's all epoxy. Sometimes.
The mixed ones are really beautiful, too.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun to make them compatible.
I've picked up one or two of your bowls and looked at, you know, the progression of different media that you use going up to the top, and it's like, how did he do that? It's just amazing.
For this new exhibit, I ran across a way to control the colors in the wood.
Right.
And I had two pieces of wood, 6 inches square, and I cut them in thirds. And then I put one piece aside, and I put the other one in the oven for a half hour at 250 degrees, which turned it a little bit brown. And I took it out, and I put another piece in the oven for a half hour at 300 degrees. And each time it got darker and darker until I had to quit at the end because it was starting to burn. It's nice that my wife was tolerant.
Don't burn down the house, right?
Well, I think that's the beautiful part about it. Sometimes it starts out as serendipity, yeah. You know, and then you learn to control the material. So it's been, I mean, it's been really fabulous to watch the progression of your work.
It's fun to do the experiments and get out of the beaten path.
So
there was a time I made lampshades, wooden lampshades that were translucent. So wow. If you get them down thin enough, then the light can come through, and they're quite pretty.
Very beautiful, so beautiful.
But that's very hard to do.
Well, Mary Ann, you had one of your works in, I think, 2008, in the Lieutenant Governor's Office. Tell us a little bit about that process of getting it there.
Oh, it was a competition open to women of Indiana only.
Okay.
And
so I can't do that.
No, sorry. And the Lieutenant Governor and her staff chose which six pieces would hang in her office in the Indiana State House for 1 year. And mine was one of the pieces chosen. It was a large, very large painting of a pastel painting of a sunset over Lake Michigan. And I was just thrilled that it was chosen. But what was really neat was the opening reception was afternoon tea with the Lieutenant Governor at the Indianapolis Museum of Art, catered by Wolfgang Puck.
Oh, my gosh.
I didn't even know how to dress for the occasion. And my daughter, who has always loved fashion design, she's a graphic designer. I worked hard to get to where I am. She was born with art running in her veins. It's just no fair. But she said to me when I got the invitation in the mail, she said, "Mom, I'm going to dress you." I'm like, "Okay, fine." So she picked out something for me to wear, and I looked wonderful. But she didn't trust me to dress myself for such a big occasion.
Big occasion. Now, tell us a little bit about your process, too. You kind of touched on it. Now, you have a Nikon camera, which I'll forgive. Being a Canon, I always tease the Nikon.
Oh, you're a Canon fan.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm not really a fanboy. I always like to tease the Nikon shooters, though, and there's a whole story behind that. But anyway, so do you work a lot from photographs? Because then you can
mostly.
Mostly. Because I've seen your photographs also, and they're very, very, very well done. But
thank you. And I've even entered a few local, you know, photography competitions.
Yeah. So how do you start a new piece then? Like when you wake up,
I start with a photo. The photo is never usually where I'd want it to be for a finished painting.
Mm-hmm.
A photo should only be a starting point. It shouldn't be the finished product, because then why don't you just blow up the photo? So I get on Photoshop and I tweak it and I try different things and I experiment. I'm doing a lot of experimenting using, you know, Photoshop. And when I decide that the background, the foreground, the colors, the cropping, everything is just the way I'd want it to be for a painting, then I start in. But I'm always punching the lights and darks. I'm accentuating certain elements so that my viewer will go right for the focal point. Because a camera does not differentiate between, you know, what's off on the side. It can sometimes be crystal clear to the side of your center of interest as well as your center of interest. Camera doesn't know that you want that other stuff to be blurry on the edges. So that's where my creative knowledge comes in. When I'm doing a painting,
so is it? So you don't go, "Well, this is going to be the month of sunsets, and this is going to." It's just
sometimes,
like whatever. whatever inspires you with your photos?
Sometimes I get in a certain mood, you know, and I'll produce like 3-4 bird paintings in a row. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I'll decide, okay, I need to do some dune sunsets because some of my collectors are bugging me about it. My dune scenes, the only reason I still have that dunes painting from when it was hanging in the Indiana State House is because I have said no to at least 3 or 4 people when they've asked to buy it from me. My dunes paintings, as soon as I make them, create them, and get them in a frame, they're sold. It's just the nature of being living in this area.
It's true.
And in fact, a couple of months ago, I set a record, a new record. Within 20 minutes of posting the finished painting on Facebook, I sold my latest sunset over Lake Michigan. 20 minutes. It was gone. That was unbelievable.
I've been reading your blog.
Oh, it's a, yes.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting. So if you're interested
in art,
read her blog. So is this the sunset that sold? Is that the Maxfield Parrish one, color one that you were using? That was
yes.
a very good story.
Yes, the Maxfield Parrish colors, yeah. Yes. I'm a born teacher. I love to teach. So my blog is sort of an extension of my teaching.
Yeah, it was a very good read.
Thank you.
Any quick final thoughts in like about 30 seconds, Larry, Marianne?
I'm going to be selling some art print ornaments in our show.
All right.
I just made them.
And tell us again, at Chester and Art Center is October 6th. 2 to 4 is the opening. I'll be running for the month. Larry, any final quick thoughts?
One of the odd things you'll find in my book is a special kind of wood that you can twist with your hands.
Oh. Oh.
Wow.
There's another whole show right there.
There's a place in Washington State that takes and put planks in a steamer and then pushes it on the end. So much so that a 10-foot plank becomes 8-foot long. It really squishes it down. But when it's done, you can take and soak it in water for a couple of hours. You can twist it.
That's so cool.
One of the promotionals, they tie it in a bow. You can take a plank and tie it in a bow.
And you'll have both books to sign there at the opening?
I can bring some in so I could show, how it's done. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, we'd like to thank Marianne Pals and Larry Jensen.
Oh, yeah.
What a great
so
show this was. Thank you for being on Art in the Air today. Art in the Air is heard Friday at 11 a.m. and rebroadcast Monday at 5 p.m. Your hosts, Larry Breckner and Esther Golden. Thanks to Greg Kovach, station manager. Underwriters are for Art in the Air, Valparaiso Newser, Brower Museum, and Walt Breininger of Paragon Investments. Art in the Air is supported by the Indian Arts Commission and the National Endowments for the Arts. Hey, if you're interested in being a guest, send us your information at artontheair@gmail.com. Next week, we'll have our first anniversary show with Marco Villarreal as our guest. So we'll see you right here next week on 103.1 Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a fabulous week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know. Esther and Larry, Art on the Air today. Stay in the know.